Good morning, everybody. It's good to see everyone here. I'd like to, before we get into the lesson for the hour, I'd like for us to just take a moment to remind you of the surveys that are available in the back. We mentioned this last week. We are, the elders, are asking the members to help us evaluate our small group arrangement. And we're asking every member of the congregation to fill out one of these surveys and to place it in the box that's available back there in the foyer. And we want to stress that this is not just for those of you who are active participants in the small groups, but even those who are not. We'd really like your input. If nothing else, tell us why you're not participating. It's important that we really get a sense of what the whole congregation thinks about this experiment that we started about a year ago. And your feedback is vitally important to us in having something solid and tangible to evaluate and to study and to make a decision upon. So again, we encourage you to take advantage of this opportunity to let your thoughts and feelings be known to the leadership of the congregation. And this will be available through next Sunday. Next Sunday will be the deadline for turning these in. So hopefully you have already gotten one, filled it out. If not, there are extra copies available in the back. Be sure and pick one of those up. Give it your prayerful consideration and give us your feedback.
David,
yes.
You're
free. Here we go. Thank you. Excuse me just one moment. If this keeps up, then we're just going to have to do without it. I don't know what's going on. Yes. Here we go. How exasperating. There we go. As usual, if this does not work, then just ignore what you're seeing up there and listen. I don't know. Okay, we will take care of that. So listen carefully. Now, before we were so rudely interrupted, thank you, Larry. We're looking in Matthew chapter 6, and this is right in the middle of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount. And this section, beginning in verse 19, of course, deals with the subject of how we deal with our physical possessions, the things of this life. Our attention is immediately drawn to a statement, a prohibition, in fact, that Jesus makes three times in this setting, and that is, do not worry. Now, that's pretty simple, isn't it? Jesus is commanding us not to worry. But, of course, the problem is that that just seems so utterly simplistic. It's very easy for a wise man 2,000 years ago to say, do not worry. He doesn't have to live in my shoes. He doesn't have to deal with all the problems and the struggles of life that I have to deal with in 21st century America. How could what Jesus thought or commanded all those years ago have any kind of real relevance to what I'm dealing with in my life today? What I'd like for us to do this morning, though, is to look at the context in which Jesus provides that prohibition. And notice that there is something that Jesus is talking about in this larger context that really provides for us a key to truly being able to live without worry. It is possible for us to live a worry-free life, but we have to approach it from the standpoint that Jesus is laying out for us here in this section that we just read. If there's more involved here than just simply telling somebody, don't worry. Again, that's easy to say, but how do we live that way? So what I'd like for us to do this morning is to first spend some time identifying the problem that Jesus is addressing and then look at how he addresses it. What is this key to the worry-free life that Jesus lays out for us? Let's first examine the nature of the problem. Jesus is telling people not to worry because we all do. Remember that the audience to whom Jesus was giving this instruction back then consisted primarily of lower to middle class people who lived in a very primitive economy. These were people who were farmers, they were craftsmen, they were merchants, they were people who basically lived a hand-to-mouth existence. They were, virtually all of them, just one step away, one accident away from tragedy, from disaster. And they knew that. They lived their life every day with the worry hanging over their heads that it could all come crashing down at any moment. In fact, if you'll notice what Jesus tells them in here, he talks about worrying about the food that they eat or what they drink in verse 25. In verse 28, he mentioned their clothing. They worry about what they wear. You know, you and I don't have to worry about that. If things really get bad, we go to the Goodwill store and there's all kinds of clothes there, pretty cheap. Those people didn't have that as an option. But you'll notice also in verse 34 that they worried about the future. He says, do not worry about tomorrow. Aren't so many of the worries that we have in this life centered on what might happen tomorrow? We lay awake at night wondering what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, next month, next year. And Jesus says, don't worry about tomorrow. And of course, what these people were dealing with back then is something that we can relate to in our lives today. We worry about our jobs individually. We worry about the economy in general and how that's going to impact our lives. We worry about our health. How much of our attention right now in this country is being devoted to the massive worry that people have about their health care? We're spending billions, trillions of dollars as a society trying to address the worry, the intense worry that people have about the state of their health. Those of us who are parents worry about our children, don't we? And you know something? As we get older, then we begin worrying about our parents and what they're going through as they approach the end of their life. And of course, we never stop worrying about our kids, do we? Even if we are well off, if we have been blessed with a great deal of this world's goods, and we have everything that we need, money is no object now, I can buy whatever I need, guess what? We still worry. Now we're worrying about maintaining all that we possess. We worry about protecting our investments and our possessions. You'll notice that Jesus talked here about laying up treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy, where thieves break in and steal. The more you get, the more you worry. You're not going to get away from it. No matter what position you occupy in this life, high or low, good or bad, you're going to have something to worry about. We can worry about a rogue government that can take away our freedoms. We can worry about the weather. We can worry about crime. And in all of that, Jesus says, do not worry. Great. Now I have to worry that I'm going to go to hell because I spend too much time worrying. You see, we've got a problem here, don't we? That we spend way too much of our time doing something that Jesus tells us we should not be doing. So how do we struggle with stress and anxiety in this life? Well, some people resort to medication. Now, let me say at this point, I just want to make sure that nobody misunderstands what I'm saying here. I recognize that there can be some chemical imbalances, hormonal imbalances, that medication is the only way to deal with it. I recognize that, and I'm not being judgmental toward anybody that uses medication to try to keep their anxieties under control. I am concerned, however, that that is the solution of first choice. That we depend entirely too heavily on medication when, in many cases, it's really not necessary if we could just learn a more appropriate means of managing our worries. Some people try to deal with their stress and anxiety by therapy, and they will spend tons of money sitting on a couch, you know, pouring their heart out to some expert who's going to help them sort through all their anxieties and all the problems from the past and help them sort out and how to deal with worry in their daily lives. Some people, of course, just simply don't deal with it at all. And these are the people who have to deal with ulcers and anxiety attacks. In extreme cases, they are overcome with depression and perhaps can even have a complete nervous breakdown. And I have to add to this list, there's one more category of how people deal with worry, and that is what I call the Alfred E. Newman School of Stress Management. And you remember Alfred E. Newman's motto was, "What? Me worry?" And that's basically their approach to life. They just simply refuse to accept responsibility. And I fear that there is a generation of young people growing up today who have pretty much adopted that attitude toward life. They're not going to worry, because they are fortunate enough to live in a fairly wealthy society in which they can just become leeches on society. They can live in mom and dad's basement, play video games all day long, meals prepared, clothes are washed, no worry, no problem. And they don't accomplish anything either. That's not dealing with worry. Those people are going to have a rude awakening someday, and it's not going to be very easy. The Anxiety and Depression Association of America, I didn't know there was such a thing, but they have compiled some statistics that tell us just how serious this worry problem is in our culture. They state that anxiety disorders are the most common mental illness in the U.S., affecting some 40 million adults in our country, age 18 and older. That's 18% of our population. And these anxiety disorders cost our country more than $42 billion a year, almost one-third of the country's total mental health bill. And this is just worry. There's nothing physically wrong with people. It's just the mental stress of having to deal with the life that's right in front of us. That's the cost that is being paid. That's the burden that is being borne by a society that has not been able to figure out how to get away from worry. You know, people say that they have no use for the Bible because it's so irrelevant. The Bible was written 2,000 years ago. What possible application can it have to my life today? Here's a good example of why it's relevant. Jesus is dealing specifically and directly with a problem that is dragging our nation down and us as individuals along with it. It's very relevant. And we need, as a people, as individuals, we need to pay more attention to what Jesus is saying, specifically in this context, that we can absolve ourselves of this burden of worry and anxiety and stress that so many of us are carrying. It doesn't have to be that way. And Jesus is telling us it shouldn't be that way. Here's how you do it. How can I have a stress-free life? Now let's look again at the general context in which Jesus is laying this out. It starts in verse 19, in fact with another command, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth." Now right there is another one that's problematic. Is Jesus saying that it's wrong for me to invest in the stock market? Is he saying that it's wrong for me to have a savings account in my local bank? I don't think so. But what is he saying? So there's a command. We've already noticed the command, do not worry. What's all the rest? There's some 16 verses here. Jesus is blathering on and on about something. There's only a couple of real commands that are issued here. Three. We'll notice the third one later. So what's all the rest of what he's saying? I would encourage you to go home and read this section again and notice a contrast between commands, which is what draws our attention, and just statements of fact. Notice the difference there? There's a difference between commands, do this or don't do that, and just a statement of reality. Here's the way things are. You notice Jesus is blending these commands to do not worry with a lot of statements of fact. Here's the way the world is, people. Look at it. Open your eyes to it. Recognize how the world really works. It's what he's saying, and you won't have a need to worry. Now let's go through some examples here and notice how he lays this out. For example, he says, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. What does he mean by that? What he means is that your emotional well-being is tied to what you value. What you are on the inside is going to be determined by what you place in your life as of greatest value to you. And if you place as the greatest value in your life that which moth and rust can destroy and thieves can break in and steal, guess what? You're going to have something to worry about. You see the connection there between the statement of fact and the command? The command is don't worry, but here's why. Because you have your heart in the wrong place. You're valuing something that is a far inferior value to that which is of greater value. Instead, he said, lay up treasure in heaven rather than on earth. Notice also, he makes the statement, you cannot serve God and mammon. Now, we need to be careful here because some people read that in terms of another prohibition. When Mom tells Junior, she points to the platter of cookies that she just placed on the table, and she tells Junior, you cannot have any of these cookies before supper. And all the while, what's going through Junior's mind? He's plotting. He's thinking, you know, there's some way that I can snag one of those cookies before dinner time. And odds are good, before dinner time, he will have succeeded in getting one of those cookies. Mom said you cannot have one of those cookies as a prohibition. That's not what Jesus is saying here. He's laying out a logical impossibility. He's saying you can't do this. You cannot serve God at the same time that you're serving mammon. But you know what we try to do? We try to split the difference. We want one foot in the God column. I'm going to serve God. I love God. I want to do His will. But then we have the other foot in the mammon column. And so I want to dabble in all the goodies and the things of this world, and that's important to me. And Jesus is saying, you're kidding yourself. You can't do that. You're either going to serve God. He's going to be more important to you than anything else, including the riches. Or you're going to be serving the riches, the mammon, the things of this world. And God is going to have to play second fiddle. Take your choice. Which is it? Again, this isn't a command. He's simply making a statement of fact. You can't serve both. You can't serve two masters. You have to choose. Which one is going to be your master? Look at a third example, where he talks about God feeding the birds and clothing the lilies of the field. What is he saying there? It's simply a statement of fact that God provides for His creation, doesn't He? God takes care of what He's created. And of course, he follows that up by the statement, God's going to take care of you, isn't He? Look in verse 30. Now, if God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is, and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will He not much more clothe you of your little faith? Are we of less value than the birds or the flowers? No. It's a statement of fact. But how often do we think about it that way? Instead of thinking ourselves as objects of God's love and affection and concern and care, we, again, put God off on a shelf somewhere and we look at this life and all the burdens of this life as something I've got to deal with. This is on me. And so we eat ourselves up with worry about it. How I'm going to deal with all of this stuff that I've got to do or protect or whatever. And then notice the statement that he makes. He actually poses it in the form of a question. How many of you can add one cubit to your stature? Go home and worry about trying to grow one inch taller. Or I think some translations actually put this in terms of your lifespan. Okay, worry about how long you can, about adding another minute to your life. That's not a command. That's a statement in the form of a rhetorical question. You can't. Worry's not going to get you anywhere there. You see, there are things in this life that we can't change. Now, I don't think that's any grand revelation to anybody here. But how often do we stop to ponder that and the implications of that? If, in fact, there are things in this life that I just simply cannot change, then why worry about it? Why waste 1 second of my life and my mental energy worrying about things that I can't change, I have no control over? Now, there are other things that we could look at in this section that we'll not take the time to look at, but I'm trying to help you understand the approach that Jesus is taking to this whole subject of worry. What Jesus is doing here is trying to get us to understand reality. The nature of the world in which we live, the life that we live. He's telling us, step back and just take a hard look at the nature of your life. And if we could do that and really open our eyes to the truth that comprises our life, we would come to recognize, you know, I really just don't have that much to worry about. By giving us a different vision of reality, Jesus establishes a framework for how to live our lives. For example, in verse 19, when he said, "Do not lay up treasure on earth," all he's saying here is that it is not smart for us to let something that is of superficial value distract us from something that is of far greater value. He's saying, folks, it doesn't make any sense. Why are you wasting so much of your time on something that is just so inconsequential in the big scheme of things? Get your priorities straight. Or when he says 3 times in this section, "Do not worry." Again, it's very easy for us to shrug that off. Jesus doesn't know what he's talking about. He doesn't live my life. Well, he understands a lot more than we give him credit for. What he means by that is, if we understood what was truly important in life and who it is that controls our life and all that is in it, the fears that consume us, we would recognize are simply not worth worrying about in the long run. But that's the trick, isn't it? Understanding what is important in life. Really recognizing who it is that controls our life. Jesus often took this approach in dealing with the subject of the material things of this world. In the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12 and verse 15, he said on one occasion when this young man came to him and said, "Master, tell my brother to share the inheritance with me." Do you remember Jesus' response? He said, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, For one's life does not consist of the things he possesses. Isn't Jesus doing the same thing there in one verse that here he spends 16 verses doing? The command is, take heed and beware of covetousness. Don't let covetousness, an inordinate greed or desire for the things of this world, don't let that dominate your life. And then he gives the reason why, by appealing to reality. For life does not consist of the things we possess. Do we ever stop to think about that? My life, the essence of my life, does not consist of my financial statement. So why do we spend so much time thinking about our financial condition? Thinking about our possessions? Worrying about the things of this world? You know, maybe Jesus is onto something here. Maybe we have a problem with covetousness and we never knew it. What Jesus is telling us here is that our propensity to worry is a symptom of a deeper disease that we're struggling with in our life. We've never opened our eyes to really recognize it. Once we do open our vision to this new concept of the world and how it operates and what it is, it will transform how we relate to everything else in our life. For example, when you can reach the point that you can see your career, your job, as an opportunity to live your faith, that is, an opportunity to help and to serve other people rather than to accumulate things for yourselves, rather than defining your very identity. You know, isn't that a problem? That people get so engrossed in their careers that it becomes all-consuming. Everything else fades away in comparison to achieving my career goals and dreams. Folks, if that defines you, if that describes you right now, I'd say you've got a problem. Because someday you're going to lose that job. It's not a threat. It's just a fact of life. Someday, that job is not going to be yours anymore. And then what? When you can recognize your career as an opportunity to live your faith, you know what? You're going to be able to relax. You're going to be able to enjoy all the things that God has given you, be they many or few. And you're going to find a peace of mind that has been eluding you through all of this activity and busyness that you have been occupying yourself with. But look at all the money and the possessions that you have been knocking yourself out to accumulate. When you view these things not as the ultimate goal in life, but when you view them finally as mere tools to serve God. And by that, I mean that you are using these things to achieve a greater goal, laying up treasures in heaven. And by that, you're serving people, you're helping people, you're giving what the Lord has blessed you with to help others. You're probably not going to end up the richest person in the world, monetarily. But Jesus is saying, you'll have far greater riches. And you're going to have a peace of mind, a contentment about this life and the things of this life that you never knew you could have. Look at the relationships in your life. How many of us look at the people who are close to us as crutches to lean upon for emotional support? It could be our spouse, it could be our children, it could be good friends, it could be any number of people. But we look at these people and these relationships as critical to our well-being. Relationships define who we are to the point that if we were to lose them, our world would just fall apart. And so we worry about clinging to these relationships, to these people that are so important to us in this life. I'm not belittling marriage or parenthood or friendships or any of these other things. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying when they become the most important thing that define my happiness in this life, I have a problem. Nobody should ever occupy the position in my life that if I lose them, my world just falls to pieces. Instead, I ought to be able to look at these important people in my life as objects of divine love. They are people, again, to whom I give my life to them. I serve them. I help them. And I find my joy in that service to them. And in doing so, I don't worry about losing them. Oh, sure, if I were to lose them, I would grieve. It would hurt. But my life doesn't end. So I'm not going to lay awake at night worrying about losing them. Because you see, my attention is focused somewhere else. In all of these areas, I realize that my life is in the capable hands of God, and I have nothing to fear. In all of this, Jesus is really echoing a sentiment that is found throughout the book of Psalms. Do you remember how the 23rd Psalm, "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." I don't have to worry. I have no reason to worry. But in fact, look at how Jesus summarizes this. Let's go back to our text in Matthew chapter 6. We'll begin reading in verse 31. "Therefore do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For after all these things the Gentiles seek, for your heavenly Father knows that you need all these things." But notice, now this is that third command in verse 33. "But seek first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." Seek first the kingdom of God. Seek God's guidance, His direction, His authority, His command of your life. You turn your life over to God. And Jesus says, you'll never again have anything to worry about in your life. Is that important to you? Do you want a trouble-free, a worry-free life? Then make God first in your life, and everything else in your life is going to lose its power to make you worry. If you're here this morning and you recognize that you have allowed the things of this world for far too long to tie you up in a tight knot, then you need to cut it loose. You need to let it go. And turn your life over to God. Jesus knows what He's talking about here. If we can reorient our understanding of the world, of reality, and recognize what's truly important in life, and to realize what's not important, then worry will just never have an opportunity to invade our minds and our lives. You need to respond to the Lord's invitation this morning to surrender your life to Him, to take on this worry-free life that He's offering you. You have an opportunity this morning to do that, and we encourage you to come forward and express your need as we stand and sing the invitation song. Won't you come?
My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust
darkness fails, it is a lovely day.
Sinking sand.